Welcome back to Ozark and Chill, episode 6. We finally get some death here, Frank, but not who I was anticipating dying. Let's start at the beginning. Unbelievable 4 minutes of episode 6. Maybe because of everything we know, my favorite 4 minutes of the show here. We start off in the therapist's office.
Yeah, they finally spill the beans in front of the therapist. They lose their mind, starting with the therapist telling them that they are both paying them off, so that she shows some truth between them finally, and then they lose their minds and spill their whole story to the therapist.
Yeah, and right after, the therapist drops the bomb on them as both Marty and Wendy are needling poor Sue, the therapist, to take their side. They're paying this lady. She admits, what does it say about a marriage when the wife and the husband are both trying to pay me off? And of course, that sets us off into a whole different, conversation here with the knockdown dragout fight.
Yeah, kind of interesting too. Marty has known everything that Wendy's doing, and don't necessarily see the opposite side of that. He's getting like a slow release into Marty following everything she's doing as people come to her and tell her what's going on, whether it's the KC mob, the therapist, etc. You see Wendy get like a slow drip of everything that Marty's doing behind the scenes that she has no idea what's going on.
Yeah, and Marty says it just point blank. Your ambition makes you reckless. You know, Wendy, of course, gets defensive and calls Marty jealous that she can't keep up with him in this whole ordeal. Knockdown, drag-out fight that ends with Marty screaming, basically, in Wendy's face, you're a scary, selfish, power-hungry fucking bitch. Unbelievable scene there. My wife looks at me and goes, I don't think they're coming back from this.
Yeah, usually don't. You don't come back from those kind of words. Most people wouldn't either. Maybe, though, and later in the episode, they do kind of rejoice a little bit, though. But the therapist is another loose end for them, and it's going to create a lot of problems. Do you think the therapist who said that she needs a shitload of money to be quiet, do you think she makes it out alive of the season?
I do. She's a lovable figure. I don't think we need to kill her. I think that's just a funny little plot line that they threw in there. Maybe just a couple one-liners to get a little giggle out of a very serious situation, right? Marty and Wendy going back and forth. Good question. You know what? She could be on the death pool. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me. Let's put it that way.
Another thing that we find out in this little conversation, explosive first 4 minutes of the episode, Marty admits to listening in on Wendy's conversation. Could be why some of this went from a 9 to a 13 on the insane scale with their conversation. But of course, it ends with Marty saying, get the fuck out. I don't need you. Which then, as they're leaving, Wendy starts walking towards home. Marty pulls up alongside her in the van, says, Wendy, get in the car. She says, I'm 43 minutes from home. By the time I get there, I want you gone.
Yeah, and sure enough, he is gone, and he goes to stay at the motel that Maya's staying at, which is, conversation for later, I guess, at this point, but a very calculated effort here by Marty to get out of the house and then get into the motel where he needs to compromise an FBI agent.
Needs to is the perfect word there, because he's told Navarro that's what he's going to do. That was part of the agreement for his release. But as we move through the episode, remember, the FBI is still obviously in these casinos. They're trying to worry about keeping the handle at a normal level, as they tend to, lower the smurfing that's going on. So we see Sam, the realtor, the funeral director guy, whatever. He's playing with some big chips. And of course, Agent Miller, who seems super sharp, is sitting there looking pretty curious at all this action he's putting down the table.
Yeah, and one of her agents who's now working there kind of gives her a nod and, check out this guy. He brought in a bunch of money and he's losing it. I just find it kind of funny because having spent a lot of time in casinos over the last couple of years, there's a lot of dumb people with a lot of money coming in and out, just blowing it relentlessly. So it is kind of funny that every time they have someone in there blowing money, they're like, they somehow are like attracted to this guy in some rich area of Missouri. Like I kind of hate that part of the show, but they instantly notice him and she kind of gives him a nod like, okay, I see. Let's follow this guy at some point. So his story may be getting a little bit bigger with Sam here.
It is a hilariously small boat though for this massive casino that they're talking about. This isn't exactly the MGM, over here or something from Macau. But anyways, Frank Jr. and Ruth get into it. Frank Jr. comes in with his invoice. Kind of cool little situation here where we had the two untouchables, right? Frank Jr. and Ruth battling it out. Of course, the invoice is from when Ben had dumped 50 pounds of birdseed on his Trans Am, which is a hilariously dumb car. And it's ruined his custom paint job, but Ruth stands up for herself, crumples up the invoice, throws it back at him, and says, "You're not a fucking authority."
Yeah, and I think that that line kind of goes perfectly with Ruth's need to show authority over almost everyone in the show except for, you know, her bosses, Marty, Wendy, Helen. She backs down to them and shows authority over every single other person in this in the series. So I think she needs to and will continue to show, you know, an authoritative kind of presence over top of those people, which she needs to do.
One of the things I missed the first time I watched this, but I rewatched this morning, Ruth changes the meetup point for this next drop when it was a very, very explosive situation. Frank Jr. is very adamant about a place for that to be dropped. Ruth says, absolutely not. It needs to be here. And we'll get to that in a second. Do you have something to say about that, Frank?
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second, but that is going to get her into a lot of trouble. I'm glad you pointed that out. It's going to be questionable as to, you know, some relation there with the mob, I'd say.
Well, next up, we see Darlene showing up to the Bird offices, if you will. And of course, Helen's in there. Wendy's admitting that her and Marty had a little bit of a fight, explaining it won't be a problem. And in walks crazy ass Darlene, who wants to have a conversation with her boss to Wendy, right? And so her and Helen have this conversation. Darlene wants back in. The poppies are planted. She wants her distribution deal back. Helen rightfully says, what kind of a lunatic plants poppies this close to a casino? And by the way, you killed 57 people when you sparked our drugs.
Yeah, a casino that's used for laundering money with poppy seeds that were going to be used as dirty money. And she's, you know, making heroin here right next to a casino in which she knows they're laundering all this money. So it would be like having a huge marijuana field in, you know, in Georgia and then setting off a fire next to it. Not a great idea for, you know, people to come snooping around when the feds are already there. So it's just another clash with Darlene, Wendy, Helen, and we'll see Ruth come into the picture here soon. But just another loose end, someone who knows too much that is going to get involved here. You know, and then, you know, we, in the next scene, we see her go to Sheriff Nix and kind of voice her concerns to him as well.
Yeah. And as she's finishing up with Helen, the, you know, the two lines back and forth, broken promises got consequences. And Helen says, bring them on. We are barreling towards a Snell in maybe the sheriff's office versus cartel war at some point. I cannot wait for that.
And Darlene is just too much of a, problem and not a big enough shark in the show for Helen to give a damn about her, right? Like in the real world that is the Ozark world, Helen could not care less about Darlene. She makes that pretty clear. And I think she's going to be pretty prepared just to knock her off if she has to. So it just seems like, okay, well, we'll just kill you then. And that seemed to be like the attitude that I got from that conversation.
You know, you mentioned that Darlene then heads to Sheriff Nix's office and she says, just flat out, that's how their agreement works. She wants them to distribute the product. Sheriff Nix initially pushes back and Darlene says, look, we're going to be up in 3 months. Get it done. And by the way, your agreement with the birds is over, which comes into play in the next scene. You see Charlotte and that hoe bag Aaron, who I'm really starting to dislike here. You know, just the character, not the person, meeting up with this informant again, right? Aaron says they're going somewhere. Clearly by the interaction from Charlotte, she did not know they were going to meet up with this FBI CI guy that also ran for the Kansas City mob. Weird interaction with Jonah shooting bottles and trying to impress Aaron while this guy's trying to impress Aaron. Cops pull up, gets everybody arrested.
Yeah, points the gun right at Jonah's face. You know, Jonah shoots off the bottles because he's got a good shot from his time with Buddy. You know, that whole ordeal kind of happening. I think the whole point of that was just to show Tommy's instability. Like, I have to question whether that was part of the plan. As we see a little bit later, I don't think it was. I think he's just kind of losing his mind with the, you know, what he has going on is clearly not a stable situation. He's working for a mob trying to flip for an FBI agent on a guy who he's also working for that works for a Mexican cartel. So like, there's a lot probably going on with his safety overall. And it's not like, it seems like Evans is the only one that's kind of overseeing this whole situation. So there's just a lot probably going on for Tommy at this point. You know, I think it's just too much pressure for him. And I think he's starting to lose his mind. And I don't think he really cares what happens to him other than him just trying to get like information out of Aaron, which is like it's the wrong way to go because she doesn't know anything. So, you know, again, Aaron getting in trouble, like I said in the last episode, because she doesn't know the gravity of the situation. And I think, again, I still think that Charlotte is going to have to tell her actually what's going on. There was some foreshadowing there early in the season. I think she's going to have to tell her actually what's going on to protect her life from Tommy and these other, you know, mobsters and things that are going on around her.
Yeah, you know, and of course it leads to the interaction between Helen and Wendy where Helen decides that they are not friends. They've dipped their toe in the friendship water, but they are not. And that's just after, you know, as many parents happen to do, they think the best of their children, are a little bit naive as to what's going on. Helen thinks her little Aaron's an angel, and Wendy says, this chick's trying to lose her virginity at all costs. She's not, you know, little sweet Aaron that you're thinking of. And it could lead to that gap, that little wedge in the barracks here between Helen and Wendy growing just a little bit more.
Yeah, and you start to see maybe the discomfort between them now, and you start to see the streamline of information going Charlotte, Wendy, Helen now, and that is probably bad for Aaron here because she doesn't seem to really care what her mom thinks. They talk about it in the kitchen, right? And she's just like as mouthy as you could ever imagine someone being. If I were 16 and said that, my dad would have just turned around and punched me directly in the face, probably. I can't imagine that ever happening. But again, for the show, I'm sure, but you're starting to see her rebellious attitude that we saw to Charlotte last season, right? This is the same thing that we saw last season from Charlotte. Once Charlotte grabs onto the gravity of the situation, now it seems she understands the business. Maybe if Aaron finds out that she's in grave danger and her mother especially is in grave danger, she'll kind of change her tune a little bit.
We do then see Ben is able to get it up. You know, they tried to have a sexual encounter. He said he just had too much to drink. Of course, Ruth took a little bit of offense to it. And then they actually get it on. He gets it hard. They have some sex. Just bringing those two closer together, showing that bond. Ben's off his meds, and we see a really interesting conversation between Wendy and Ruth about how he is when he's not on his medication. And Wendy pleads with her to, hey, get him back on his meds. And of course, Ben obviously has a huge role to play here, as we mentioned earlier with Tommy. But before we get to that, we do see, I think, the reason for this pregnancy from Agent Miller. As she's having a conversation with Marty, they're putting he's helping her with her laundry to the car. She says, I'm due in 6 weeks. This needs to be done by the time I leave. I want to make sure you're taken care of by the time I leave, basically, right?
Her timeline, the timeline is good. Anytime you hear timeline in these shows, it's good because you're never really sure what the time has passed. We got it in the first episode when Darlene says, you know, her husband died 6 months ago, and now we're getting this future timeline of, well, this whole season is going to be wrapping up in the next 6 weeks. Probably before that, I would imagine that being super pregnant and working as an FBI agent isn't ideal. I would say that she probably in real life wouldn't be doing this anyway at this point in her pregnancy, but especially involved in a Mexican drug cartel. So I would say that you're probably looking at like a 4 week period, right, coming up in the next four episodes. So, you know, that probably makes a lot of sense for me. And like I said, I really like when they throw the timeline stuff in there just so we have an idea of how long this is going to play out.
You know, as we're going through this, I'm actually just remembering how involved Ruth is in this episode, because fast forward just a touch, we see Darlene again and Wyatt. Three is now out to Darlene's ranch there to have some dinner. And weird interaction. I think the weirdest thing maybe in the entire show, they're having a stew as Darlene is sitting there when Wyatt and Three are going back and forth, and Wyatt's offering the cabin to Three, and Three saying, so I'm bunking with you. And Wyatt's like, no, I'm staying here. Darlene looks at Three and says, you haven't touched your stew. Do you want more mustard? You put mustard in stew?
I wonder if that's like a Missouri thing or something.
I hope, because I've never heard of that.
Yeah, because I I can't say I eat a lot of stew, to be honest.
But anyways, the big issue here is, you know, obviously Darlene then gets up, shows some very blatant affection towards Wyatt right in front of Three, who runs back to the trailer park and lets Ruth know, which leads to Ruth then going up to the Snells and knocking on the door.
Yeah, and this is kind of the role of, this is how like cults happen, right? Like you get one or two people and then you send them off to be your recruiters. So Wyatt is now lead recruiter, Love is Blind with a 70-year-old lady. And, you know, here he goes recruiting his, you know, recruiting Three to show up and be a part of this. But luckily he at least has somewhat of a brain. The other thing to remember about this like cultish behavior is that cults tend to feed on broken people, people in a lot of pain, people that have lost their way. It doesn't seem like Three has had, you know, that level of experience that Wyatt has had at this point.
And he's almost too dense really to be aware of his surroundings. At least that's what they portrayed earlier in the show. Now he's grown up a little bit, combs his hair. He looks pretty put together, but then we see Ruth, who's obviously upset. She goes back home, confides in Ben that, you know, she's ruined Wyatt's life. Just once again, bringing them closer together. And then we see Marty, who's still being followed, and he jumps on the phone with Helen as he's in a basically empty parking lot other than this one Ford Explorer that's been following him the entire episode. She says, "It's not us. Can you go out the back door?" And her guy will pick him up, right? Heads home. He's going to stay at home. Wendy's going, "What the hell are you doing here?" He said, "I'm being followed." Kind of a hilarious line where he's going to sleep on the couch. And she said, "It's a fucking house made of windows." He's like, "Oh, yeah, I'll go upstairs."
Yeah, and circling back to that call, I was like, man, Helen's lying again. She knows everything. This is obviously the cartel. We come to find, you know, that it's not in fact them, because why would they pick him up behind the store and take him home if they wanted him? So my initial thought was, once I realized that it wasn't the cartel, was that it was the FBI. I thought that Evans or Maya, and I had suspected Maya was, you know, Agent Miller was like putting pressure on him, like, "Hey, we're the cartel, we're gonna come kill you," you know, like kind of fooling him into taking a deal, right? Like that's where I thought the plot line was going. We come to find out that's not where it goes, but yes, I wrote down a funny thing about the house full of windows, and I said in my notes here, I put in quotes something about some sort of metaphor about a glass house. It's like kind of the name of the season of all these places. And I think it's purposely done for them that they live in this big house that is just all glass. Right?
That's a really good point. Do as I say, not as I do kind of thing.
Yeah. Some sort of metaphor there about throwing stones. I thought was interesting.
You know, they had a really kind of in-depth conversation about reminiscing about a conversation with manslaughter and the kids asking what murder was, which is, I mean, as all 13-year-olds do, right? What's murder to their parents? Anything you found you made from that, or was it just kind of filler for the episode? I couldn't really get much deeper than that's probably something, I just don't know what it is.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. I tried to get super conspiratorial about the man's laughter part, because he said, "Oh," and Charlotte said, "Oh, it's just man's laughter." Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that was just like alluding to like how no one cares like who and how people die in their situation, because they just all have like lost so much empathy and understanding of the world, really, and how the rest of the world lives at this point. Maybe that's just what it was. I'm not sure, but it was, I thought there was going to be more there, and maybe that's some sort of foreshadowing for what we don't know what's to come yet.
Well, and then we have what I thought was going to be an absolute shit show of Ben, who's off his meds, major storyline, basically the whole episode, says to Jonah, "Let's go for a ride, bring your drone." And yeah, almost bizarre kind of laughter ideas of, "Hey, let's take a trip across country." I'm thinking, is this the end for Jonah? But it's actually far worse. That close bond that we've seen, the building of Ruth and Ben all episode, comes to a head. As we mentioned, Ruth changed the drop point. Ruth's heading in to pick up the next delivery. Ben is actually taking Jonah to follow and keep an eye on Ruth to see where she's going. He's worried about Frank Cosgrove Jr. And as they're looking overhead with the drone, they see this drop spot that's been changed. Of course, Tommy's a total dickhead and pulls too far away, and Ruth's doing her Ruth thing, screaming across the parking lot saying, "You really gonna make me walk over there?" And Ben sees three cars flying up the drive and calls Ruth.
Well, the three SUVs too, as you know, Helen had told Marty that same day, you know, we saw three SUVs leaving, they think they're headed towards Chicago. So he was like, we're clear, we're good, and no one's here to threaten you, which I thought was interesting because, you know, a few episodes ago, we come to find out that Ruth tends to meet up with these guys 2, 3, 4 hours away, which is smart on her end, but that also was the reason why those SUVs were on their way well before that. So it kind of interesting that, you know, she makes him drive way out of the way. We see Helen alludes to three SUVs leaving and they're no longer there and that's Marty's good to go. And then we find out that maybe not so much because, you know, they pull up and light the truck on fire and kill the delivery guys. And, you know, Ruth is kind of standing there watching. And luckily, you know, they did pull that far away because otherwise Ruth would have been dead.
Yeah, she would have been right in the mix there. Good catch, by the way, Frank. I may have been one too many bourbons in because I completely missed that point you made there. But like you said, Ruth's kind of hiding behind the building. Once again, they don't take the cash. They set everything on fire. Tommy is dead. The drop has been compromised. Now Frank is obviously going to find out when Tommy doesn't return that something was up. And I'm guessing think Ruth is behind it.
Yeah, they're going to think Ruth is behind it for sure. Or Marty's behind it, whatever. But you know, now we're going to see, you know, obviously is the rival drug cartel. This is the payback from the horse, you know, all that good stuff, at this point. So, we're going to see another clash. I imagine that Marty is going to have to do some more smoothing it over, might have to give more percentage away from this business, which again, I think is kind of their way out where it's no longer attainable. And they just like pass off all this money to everybody else. And they're just, you know, get out of there at some point. So yeah, it's just the closeness of everything. Were you confirming that Tommy is dead through all of that then?
I mean, that seemed like an open and shut case there as okay. You know, there's what, 3 or 4 guys by the truck and they, you know, the cartel jumps out of these trucks, shoots everybody up. And then we see the huge explosion of the truck. If he's not dead, he is full. He's looks like Swiss cheese.
Yeah. So, you know, there was, you know, early in the episode, we had seen the conversation with Tommy and Agent Evans, where he's basically like, hey, she wants to have sex. You know, what do I do, basically, because he's obviously, you know, she's a minor and he is not. And Agent Evans goes, just don't knock her up. Well, you know, that kind of show, I thought that was going to be a linchpin between Maya and Agent Evans. Now, he could be just work to compromise someone else and says, hey, go have sex with this girl, whatever. But you know, there's definitely shows some level of, you know, disregard for basic human decency with Evans as he's blinded by Agent Petty's death still. And I think that's eventually going to be how Marty is going to try to exploit Maya and Agent Evans between them. And we did see that a little bit when they're at the motel. Marty tries to get real personal with Agent Miller when he comes out and he says, you know, he just has like an honest conversation with her and kind of brings up Agent Evans there briefly. And his goal is going to be to sow discord between the two and create a problem between them that convinces Maya to come to his side. I think that's going to be the play anyway.
There has to be some sort of major event that makes Maya just throw her hands up and say, I can't. Yeah, you know what? You're right. It's almost good cop, bad cop, but not working on Marty, working against each other. And we've seen.
And I would say that Tommy Agent Evans conversation is just a foreshadow of what's to come, where he's going to do something reckless.
As we saw with Petty, just feeding opioids and drugs to Rachel, they're willing to do whatever it takes to get their man. And I think that's going to be their downfall with Agent Miller. And yo, Marty gets his way, man. Not always how we think he's going to, but somehow, some way, Agent Miller's coming to the bad side. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I think they're going to try to portray it that way. We still haven't seen any direct evidence of, this is my big brain working again, any direct evidence of Marty actually trying to flip her.
Well, you can't just come out and do it, right? I mean,
well, yeah, I'm just saying that we've seen him talk about taking a deal, but we haven't seen him talk about flipping her whatsoever. So he is slow playing this, but I think her remark about, well, I'm doing 6 weeks is going to force his hand here a little bit.
Frank, you just walk into a bar and start having sex with a girl. You buy her a drink, you know, warm her up a little bit with your charm and conversation. And
I'm not a money laundering, you know, for a drug cartel either. So I don't know how these people are going to operate.
Maybe I am. Maybe I'm not. We'll find out next episode. That'll do it for episode 6 here of Ozark and Chill. Episode 7 coming up next. See you guys then.